Hello and welcome to part two of the Sepultura Sepulquata Quadra specials. So, hope you enjoyed part one. If you haven't listened to part one yet, go and listen to it. This is part two. Part one was with Derek Green and part two is with the man himself, Andreas Kisser. As with the interview with Derek from a few weeks ago, this took place around March, April time earlier in the year, just to give you a bit of perspective. So hence, you know, we'll be talking about things that might be out of date by now. But anyway, you'll get that as you listen. It's great to have you all here. The Sepultura community is on the case and been incredibly supportive. So thank you all of you who've come to Talking Bollocks for the first time. Really appreciate it. Hope you're enjoying the podcast and able to find some other episodes that that you dig. There's 128 out there to get through, so please do have a look around, subscribe to the podcast wherever you can, and join the fun, join the party. So this is all about Sepultura. It ain't about me. But I am your host, Howard H. Smith. You might know me better as singer with UK thrash band Acid Rain. First album for 29 years last year, The Age of Entitlement, went down very well, worth checking out. I'm also a stand-up comedian. I've been doing stand-up comedy for 26 years. You can check out some of my comedy as the character Keith Platt. And I also runs This Ear podcast. You can find me on Talking Bollocks on Twitter. That's Talking Bollocks with a Z on the end. It's the same for Instagram and Talking Bollocks on Facebook as well. So come in, join the party. Be great to see you all. So this is the first part of the interview, and I'll be speaking to you again after this before we go into the fan questions. So this is Andreas and I having a chat a few months ago. Initially, I spoke to Derek, and we spoke all about the album, and it was really cool. And so decided to reach out to you, and you said yes, and that was great. And then in between the two of you, I got an email from a guy I know, and it was a marketing email, but he has my email address because we've done business. And that person was Jens Bogren. Because he mastered our album last year. So This is ending up being a kind of Quadra special because, like, Jens emailed me out of the blue. It's just a marketing email, and it landed right between, like, speaking to Derek and speaking to you. So I was like, oh, dude, do you fancy doing this? And he was like, yeah, cool, great. So we've had to rearrange, but we're going to speak next week. So we're going to really get into the guts of this album, I tell you.
Oh yeah, man. It's a very special album for sure. I mean, it's the second album we work with Jens. That's why we copy all the process of recording which we did on Machine Messiah, you know, our previous album.
Yeah.
Because we went to Sweden and Jens was, you know, the chemistry between us and everything was great. You know, so we decided to repeat everything and was a right choice. You know, I mean, we really improved a lot what we did on Machine Messiah together, and Quadra is a consequence of that for sure, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact that this sort of special has kind of fallen in front of my eyes is great, because it's my favorite album of the year so far, without a doubt.
Thank you.
And I mean this as a compliment. I do genuinely mean this as a compliment, right? For me, it sits perfectly between Chaos AD and Roots. For me, there is just kind of like a kind of space in there where I don't know, it's just it's phenomenal. It really is.
I understand you. It's like a lot of people, you know, make those kind of comparison, and I mean, for us, really, we never saw that way, you know. We have changes in many aspects, you know. I know a lot of people see what's happening in the front of them, you know, what we say on interviews or what comes on magazines and stuff and etc. But you know, there's a lot more, let's say, going on, and we always took, at least myself, you know, and the band, me and myself and Paulo, we took as a whole, you know. Sepultura is everything.
Yeah.
You know, we never really did like a let's say set list, you know, that we're not going to play certain songs or a certain album just because of the formation or the record label or whatever reason, you know. So for us, it's really hard. And you know, it's like, it's cool that, you know, people ask, oh, who's your favorite album and stuff? You know, it's really hard. It's like, they're like kids, you know, like my son or daughter, you know. It's like, it's really hard to you know, to balance that because you put everything that you have on every album and, you know, every energy and knowledge and whatever, you know. And but I agree that the connection you see between KUZNG and that era and Quadra, I think because KUZNG, we were in a period of our career that everything was really working great, you know, like the management and all the you know, the all the success we had with the Arise album.
Yeah.
And then we were working with Andy Wallace, you know, going to the Rockfield Studios and, you know, having the full support of the record label. We could do anything, you know. We felt that we are really achieved, you know, a position that we could do really, you know, go after the Chavantes tribe, for instance, and go in the middle of Brazil to record a song, you know. That all that was like the consequence of that era. And nowadays, it feels the same, you know. We really have the structure really flowing, a great management company, you know, here in Brazil and outside. We have really a nice business structure going on in the last 5-6 years, you know, that really changed everything around Sepultura. Sepultura was always a mess, you know, like management-wise, you know, a lot of people from family involved and all that stuff, you know.
Right,
and we finally, you know, got something that is really more professional in that sense, you know, that we can really discuss business without having the drama of you know, relationship or whatever, you know. So I think Quadra also reflects that, you know, that we go to the studio, to the practice room, really to think about music and not discuss about percentages or business or bureaucracy, you know. We have a space and time to do that, you know. When we go to the dressing room, it's really to feel like 1984, really, you know, like kids going to the practice room, you know. That's the beauty, that's the magic of it all, you know. That's why I'm here, that's why I'm still here, that's why I do what I do, you know. I love what I do. I'm still a fan, you know. I'm still a kid in that sense, you know. Really, I love to play guitar because, you know, I love Maiden and Sabbath, you know, still.
Well, and that, I think that's the beauty of metal as well, is that, you know, that's invariably the case. You know, it's fans watching fans on stage play music.
No doubt about it, yeah, definitely. You know, it feels, you know, I feel great. I think that in my best momentum as a musician, as a guitar player, as a composer, you know, as a performer, in every aspect. And Paulo and Derek and Eloy feels the same. You know, we grew up so much, and regardless of the age, or the band is 36 years old, we feel the best of our career now, you know. And I think Quadra reflects that, you know, because the music and everything we're dealing with the art and all the concept, you know, it's really exciting, you know, it's really enjoyable, you know, without all the drama and all the crazy bullshit that we had in the past, you know. So it's much clearer, it's much easier, you know, to work, and it's much easier to face the problems and to face the challenges, you know. They are there so they can be resolved, you know, and we have a great crew and a great people around us that help us really to resolve things and to find solutions, you know, which is what we do.
And having that team around you and that support around you it has obviously enabled you to just, as you say, just go off and focus on creating music apart from anything else.
Yeah, and that's what more an artist will ask for, you know. When you start playing guitar and stuff, I mean, anyone who does, or any instrument, you know, that's all you think about, you know. You have the bleeding fingers and stuff, you know, and your hand hurts and stuff, and you know, to make a bar or stuff, like, you know, it's a whole difficult, it's like Dante Alighieri going to hell and then purgatory and then heaven, you know. you have to go through that, you know, and you spend hours and hours with an instrument, and I still do that, you know, regardless of everything else, you know. This is a part of my profession. Of course, I have to be prepared and everything, but I do that with pleasure. You know, it's not a burden for me, you know. So it's great that we just think about that and not, you know, other adult stuff.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Really being in a room with a poster of, you know, Gina Simmons there and playing Kiss, you know, that's the beauty.
Well, funnily enough, when you were saying about, like, it's a pleasure and, you know, your instrument and all the rest of it, I was thinking of our guitarist, Paul, who, before we go on tour, he's always, you know, building up his downstrokes. And he uses loads of and he always uses loads of Sepultura, and invariably you usually like his post as well. So he definitely knows what he's doing.
Ah, that's killer! Yeah, I love to see people playing Sepultura. You know, the way they project, not only, you know, the metal heads, you know, that really play it like we play and stuff, and, you know, try to reproduce that, but also. We inspired so many other different artists, you know, that did piano versions and did different ensembles, you know, like classical stuff, and which is really interesting, you know, to see that heavy metal, not only Sepultura, of course, to see Metallica and many other bands that have their music presented in so many different formats and possibilities, you know, which is, I think Sepultura have that possibility as well, you know. I received so many different performances and you know that it's funny to see, like, a band, for instance, from Norway playing Hata Mahata, you know, which is very Brazilian and it's very percussive, you know. But it's funny in a very respectful way, you know. It's just different, you know. It's not that it's bad or good. It's just different, you know. It's like it is really hard, you know, to play the percussive instrument, Brazilian samba and all those rhythms, if you're not Brazilian, you know. You really have to be born here and really to have that as a very natural, like going to Cuba, for instance, you know. They have a whole different percussive world, and it's very rich and it's very unique, you know. And of course people learn how to play that and everything, but it's never the same, you know. So it's great that people have this at least this attempt, you know, to try to play percussion in metal and stuff like that, which is interesting, especially for them, you know. Maybe they will never have a possibility, or they'll never be felt motivated, you know, to do something like that. And Sepultura's music did that, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have thought that an orchestra would complement your music beautifully. And it's, I mean, it's certainly some, I think that, you know, mashing heavy metal, thrash, and strings together is just it is awesome. It's a perfect marriage. Have you ever been close to doing anything like that
with classical music
with an entire orchestra?
Oh yeah, we did once here in Brazil.
I thought so.
We did it was a part of this 24-hour festival that happens in São Paulo. That is amazing, you know. It's like shows all over the place for 24 hours, you know, and all styles of different places, and, you know, and we did one of those with an entire orchestra. It's an orchestra that is usually does that kind of stuff, you know. They go and find different partnerships, you know, to create something new, you know. So they do stuff with bands of rock and metal and rap and reggae, you know. They really try to bring the orchestral world to more of different styles of music, and we did that with Sepultura's music, you know. It was amazing. One friend of mine, which is a conductor and a maestro, he did the arrangements and stuff, and he's a metal guy as well, you know. So he understands both worlds, you know. And they're not, like you said, you know, they're not very, very different apart, you know. If you see the biography of Mozart and Beethoven and Stravinsky, you know, they were rebels, you know. They were, like, breaking the rules and saying, you know, fuck no to the establishment and that kind of stuff, you know. They are showing different ways and using music to express their rebellion, you know. And that's what rock and roll is all about, you know. Leave your hair grow and, you know, fight for the rights of freedom and all that stuff. You know, rock and roll is all about that, you know. And metal, it is rock and roll, you know. It is a relative, let's say, you know. And so in classical music, there's a lot to do, because you see in Deep Purple, for instance, Ritchie Blackmore and John Lord, you know, they started with classical music, even before they did, in rock album, you know, which was heavier and everything, you know. They did a Royal Albert Hall with an orchestra and everything, you know. And I love Stevie Howe from Yes, you know, and Ricky Wakeman and stuff, you know, Rick Wakeman. They also have a lot of classical influence alongside with the folk music, you know. Songs from Stevie Howe like The Clap and Mood for a Day, you know, inspired me so much to start learning to play classical guitar, which I do still today. You know, I study a lot, and musicians like Randy Rhoads from Ozzy, you know, and of course Yngwie Malmsteen and Tony McAlpine and stuff, you know, and many others that always, you know, interact more with the classical music, and I love that, you know. In Sepultura, I always, you know, see heavy metal as well with the classical structures and melodies to use on heavy metal, you know. So I think if Mozart was and Beethoven was still alive today, they would have a band, heavy band together for sure, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Now, that's a tour I would go and see.
Oh, can you imagine, man? It'll be fucking amazing.
Yeah, Beethoven supported by Mozart. Handel is opening. Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah, because they were heavy, you know. I mean, they did DJ, you know, for special celebrations and stuff. And of course, religion, like heavy metal, is a lot influenced by religion, you know, and history and the Bible and Satanism and all that stuff, you know. And classical music has a lot of that as well, you know. So we are talking about the same world, you know, I feel it's not any arrogance on my statement, you know, because it's just natural, you know, it feels natural, the structures of music that we listen in classical music, and you see the prog metal or prog rock, you know, you have a lot of that, you know, going on, and even in Black Sabbath and, you know, more simple stuff like songs from whatever, from the Paranoid album, you know, somehow you can feel some type of classical structure going on, you know, on the songs and how you present the riff and how the vocals comes and stuff. And I think it's something that it's a part of heavy metal without us knowing, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And funnily enough, I read a survey recently that said that the two fans of different styles of music that were most alike were fans of heavy metal and fans of classical music, and that's because they were both very arrogant and considered that their musical tastes made them better people than other people.
I don't agree with that. I think, with all the respect with jazz musicians, I think they have that attitude.
Yeah.
It's not about heavy metal. It's and rock and roll. It's one of the most, I think, democratic styles there. I think heavy metal is the most popular style in the world. You know, we did a tour in Russia in 2013. We did 17 shows in Russia, and we went everywhere. 5 shows in Siberia and all the places. It was fantastic. You know, amazing. And we play with a lot of local bands playing metal, and they use every type of instrument and music, local music, and a lot of women participating in the bands and playing instruments and stuff was great, you know. And you know, I mean, we like to play well, of course. We study our instruments, you know. You see, our idols were Iron Maiden and stuff, you know. They came playing great, and you know, Black Sabbath drums and John Bonham and drum solo and Jimmy Page and stuff. You know, it is a characteristic that is intrinsic in our way of expressing. You know, we have to play our instruments good. Otherwise, you do punk music. Sorry to the punk music. You know, but the punk music also influenced heavy metal a lot. If you see, like, British Steel from Judas Priest and even Heaven and Hell, it's a much more simpler, more direct, you know, compared to Sad Wings of Destiny or Sabotage, you know? Yeah. Because punk music came and really gave a different possibility for heavy metal, which heavy metal embraced, and not really, oh, this is not heavy metal, you just play 3 chords. For au contraire, you know, it was totally the opposite. Heavy metal really embraced that and really opened times. This is not an arrogant attitude, you know. Now talk about Ramones or Sex Pistols to a jazz musician. He's not going to even hear about, you know.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
knows the band, he knows the music, but he doesn't respect that. And
yes.
That's arrogant, you know.
Absolutely. And yeah, I look, there's a lot of similarities. I mean, my band, we're kind of a very sort of fun band live, which can be interpreted as just not giving a shit. And we used to get loads. I mean, not so much now because things are more homogenous. But we used to get loads of punks at our shows, and I'm sure you did. I'm sure you did too as well, because you get, or they recognise the fact that, okay, this might not be punk, but I recognise the attitude. And this music is fast and makes me want to move, so I'm in.
Especially live, you know, the energy the punk bands the punk bands had live, and the hardcore feeling and stuff, and of course Motorhead, you know, I think Motorhead was the band really who represents rock and roll and punk attitude in the same band, you know, with the same fierce attitude, with the, you know, thematic playing rock and roll, but with both elements very, very well balanced there, you know. And I think Motorhead was really a band that really united punk and metal fans, especially here in Brazil. You know, here in Brazil was very violent during the 80s, you know, like the mid-80s, late 80s, between the skinheads and the rock and roll guy, you know, fan or whatever, who listened to Kiss and Metallica or whatever, you know. So it's really dangerous, you know. Some people died. Some people really got into really big, huge fights and stuff just because of music, you know. It was ridiculous. And Motorhead was a band that was like unanimous on both sides, you know. So if you want a piece, just say Motorhead. Peace.
That's brilliant. Well, yeah, Motorhead have got to be the biggest sort of gateway band for people who were just into heavy metal to discover thrash metal. You've got Motorhead there that just kind of made it okay to play faster. That obviously inspired, inspired a ton of musicians.
Yeah, you see Lars Ulrich, for instance, you know, Metallica, the biggest band in the world, you know, not only metal, but Metallica can be put there together with U2 or whatever, you know. It's like, and because of Motorhead, you know, Lars Ulrich was a big metal fan, of course, but a huge Motorhead fan, you know. He used to follow Motorhead on the road, on the tour, and he went to rehearsals and stuff. He was really a Motorhead, you know, fan and stuff. And that's why he formed Metallica, you know, and look what happened, you know. So I think it's something that really inspired. Lemmy always inspired. Lemmy was a unique character, you know, that was so true, you know, was so real. He was a unanimous guy. I never heard anyone talk shit about Lemmy, you know. Yeah. Oh, Lemmy was an asshole. Lemmy was this, was that, you know. Regardless if he was talking to a politician or the Queen of England or just the fan who heard Motorhead for the first time, you know. It's like, it was fantastic, you know. He was really true. He was himself. He has his opinions and stuff. And very respectfully, you know, he always expresses his opinions, and he did what he did, and he was in peace with himself, you know. Which is very inspirational, you know. It's very motivation, and we had the privilege to tour with Motorhead so many times, to jam. I jam Overkill and going to Brazil with Motorhead many times, and Lemmy came on stage with us, and we had the same management for a while and stuff, you know. And you know, the name Sepultura came from a Motorhead song, you know, Dancing on Your Grave, which is an album I love, you know, with Brian Robinson on guitar and stuff. And, so Motorhead is everything, you know. I mean, he made Sepultura, he made Metallica, and everything else.
Brilliant. Okay, so that pleases me, because that means that the UK can reclaim thrash metal as being a genre that started here.
Yeah, man. I mean, like the you know, the thing with punk scene, you know, that is more connected, you know, with UK, but it started basically with Ramones in the New York, you know. I mean,
yes,
it's something that you can give back now.
Yeah. Oh, how unlike the British to be stealing culture from other countries. made a living out of that once upon a time. So you've got the your Wednesdays aside, where you're you know, spending your lives online every Wednesday. I think that's like really, really cool. Who came up with the idea? Because obviously you should be on tour. We should be on tour. In fact, we should both be on tour. But we're not. So who came up with the idea of saying, look, let's you know, let's be there every week?
It was a brainstorm I did with our webmaster, you know, that does our social media and stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, and coming, you know, with ideas, you know, just, you know, a lot of bands were starting to do lives, you know, and having the Metallica starting to put concerts, old concerts every Monday, you know, so the bands were trying really to see the possibilities that were opening, you know, because the touring possibility was closed. You know, we had to cancel the tour in the United States and Canada, actually postponed, you know, because we're still working on it. All the festivals in June, July now in Europe, that hurt so much not to be with you guys now, because it was a fantastic, you know, schedule that we had ahead of us. But, you know, we don't have that, you know, so we have to see what we have in our hands now. It doesn't help really to sit on the side and cry, oh, I don't have tour anymore. You know, that's a fact. Let's work in some new possibilities, you know. So we came up with this, with the Sepul Wednesday, Sepul Quarta, you know, also still using the concept of the album.
Yes.
You know, geometry, yeah. Numerology, you know, Quarta is Quarta Feira, like Wednesday, the fourth day of the week,
yeah.
You know, starting on Sunday and, you know, we call like second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth day, you know, the way we relate with the weekdays here in Portuguese in Brazil. So, you know, Wednesday we have this event, live Q&A. Now we're having guests, you know. Billy Good from Faith No More is going to be our guest on our next Wednesday, this Wednesday. And we're going to perform a song, and we have the storyteller as well, which we remember old stories from recordings of the albums and touring and stuff like that. And it's been really great because it keeps us busy, you know, it keeps us talking about the album, the Quadra
yeah.
album, talking about history of Sepultura, events and stories that we might never really, I don't know if we shared that before in interviews or no, because it's not an interview. We're just like remembering stuff, you know, it's like a
yeah.
conversation with the fan. And it's working out great, you know, because we had this connection with everyone, a continue in this transition phase, you know, because I don't know how and when the touring cycle will come back and everything. So it will take time, you know. So we need this also to help maintain our crew and maintain the structure of Sepultura as well, you know.
Yeah.
Keep our web store running, flowing with merchandising and everything. We have the album. We have, you know, vinyl, we have picture disc, we have all different formats and stuff, you know. So it helps us really to keep us going till we have the possibility to tour again, you know. And it's working great. It's really fun, and it's a new experience for everyone in the band as well, you know, which is we're growing too, and new ideas are going to start flowing, and Sepul Quarta will be something really special in our career for sure. It already is, you know, and have the potential really to grow a lot.
Yeah, and it gives some kind of focus to your week as well, doesn't it? It gives you a performance day, a project you're all working on, and it keeps everybody's minds moving.
Exactly, definitely, and it is a challenge, you know. Derek is in Los Angeles, we
yeah.
are here in São Paulo, but even though we are in the same country, we cannot see each other, you know, we are in quarantine and stuff, all that situation, which is really bad, and especially with the government or non-government we have here in Brazil, which is completely nuts and crazy. So we keep our mind really there and sane, you know, we're working, we're talking about the stuff that we love, and especially because we have new material, we have a great album, and we don't want to really let this, you know, get away with no attention. You know, our wish really was to be on stage, you know, to perform and to develop the songs live and everything. But we have Sepul Quarta to do that now, you know, up to the point we'll be able to do at least a live, you know, everyone together in the studio. I think that will be the next step, you know. But let's see, you know, day by day, I'm not really, I don't let myself really too much on the future or in the past, you know. I'm here now. The present is now, you know. Like I said, you know, what the elements we have now, let's work with that, you know. If one door closes, 10 other open, you know. So be aware, heads up, you know, ears and eyes open, because new possibilities are coming, you know. And that's very exciting, you know, that's great. especially in art, in music, you know, a new possibility, a new way, and new things that might happen, you know, and it's exciting. I like to keep it a positive attitude, you know, because if you're going through this for some reason, you know, we are together in this, and let's make the best of it, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And like you say, you have to deal with how the situation is. And yeah, none of us like it, but that doesn't matter. This is the way it is. By the way, just I did read an article today, which I'll forward you a link if you haven't seen it. They're saying that live shows will be starting as of the 15th and 16th of June in Italy. But
wow, I hope this is good.
Well, yes, but as expected, it's 1 meter seat distancing, mandatory masks and sanitizer, no contact between performers, and no standing events.
Yeah,
so
I mean, you know,
but it's a start.
Everything is valid, you know. For more, I mean, talking like this, of course, it's weird. Our reference is what we knew up to today, you know, up to this point. The point is, it's who can say this new situation wouldn't bring new possibilities and new sensations, you know? I mean, the thing is that the human being is always trying to repeat their pleasures. That's the problem, you know. This is impossible. It doesn't happen. The only thing that happens is the present, you know.
Yeah.
So we should try things. We should try. Even if it's a crazy idea or it's a stupid idea or if the idea didn't go right. I mean, we should, you know. Science and everything, the theories only have to be proven by, you know, doing the stuff, you know. It's not theoretically, we're living here, we have to do, you know, we have to go ahead and really face the situation, you know. So it is weird. It is something that last year, if you say something like that, people will laugh at you and be, oh, you're fucking idiot, you're crazy. But now it's not, you know.
Yeah.
It's a new way of seeing things. It's a new way of experiencing music and experiencing art. Dude, I can imagine, you see stories about when the photograph came, you know, the first photograph.
Yeah.
People thought that the spirits would be stealing and stuff. It's
a lot of
because why they are scared? Because they only have reference from the past, you know, and expectations. And every expectation that the human being had from the future usually is a catastrophic, you know. Oh, it's apocalyptic, it's the revelation, whatever. People expect the worst always, you know. And, you know, live today. Why are you going to die tomorrow if you're here, you know, now? Why you expect to experience the apocalypse, which is nothing is happening in that sense, you know?
Yes.
Of course, big changes are happening, but this is part of life, you know? This is so natural, the way we are, you know? So we shouldn't be scared of that, you know? We should be excited about to see new possibilities, you know? I think in art we are much motivated by that, you know, to bring a new element, to bring a cello, to bring a choir, or to bring a Brazilian instrument for metal. You know, that's what made Sepultura stand out from other bands. You know,
absolutely, absolutely. I mean, well, yeah, look, you've already inspired other musicians with your lockdown video of the song Isolation, because I saw that and that gave me the idea to do a very different kind of Isolation video.
Amazing, yeah.
So for us, and we, you know, and we even roped in Suzanne Vega as well. I mean, and all of that came from one morning seeing your Isolation video of that song, and I just started thinking and extrapolating from that, and just thought, yeah, right, why don't we do something, but we'll do it, you know, do it our way, completely differently. But straight away, there you are, you know, putting something out that's purely because of the current situation, but the knock-on effects are that, you know, that you inspired us. I'm sure people have seen our videos and that'll give them some ideas. And we're all just kind of feeding each other ideas at the moment.
Definitely. Yes. That's what art is all about. You know, we inspire each other and we do our own way and we're creating new things doing that, you know. It's a cycle, really. You know, the Beatles still inspired everyone that listened to Beatles since day one, and still people that listen to the Beatles for the first time today. You know, it's very powerful. You know, art is something very real. You know, that it keeps us sane and alive. At least myself.
Well, exactly. And the thing is that, well, what you're talking about collaborating there as well. I mean, wow, yeah. There's me showing off that we did a song with Suzanne Vega. You've been collaborating with, tribes in the middle of the South American rainforest. So, and for many, many years. But also, funnily enough, I was talking to Derek about this, about the collaboration that takes place in the studio with a producer, with somebody who's so involved. Because ultimately, your producer becomes a member of the band for the duration, doesn't he?
Definitely, yeah. Total freedom. Of course, he's signing the production, you know. So, but he's not a dictator, you know. I think a producer, of course, he is the one, you know, to know how to achieve the sounds we need, if we're gonna use certain way of recording or the other way. But we do all that together, you know. If the band doesn't agree, the project will not really flow, you know. I mean, we have to be on the same boat and the same direction. And with Jens, the chemistry was fantastic, you know. We had to adapt a little bit, and Jens had to adapt a little bit. And I'm sure his relationship with Sepultura has nothing to do the relationship we had with Creator or Opeth or any other band, you know. I think it's very unique, that type of relationship, which makes the project really flows and grow, you know. So yeah, and he has to have freedom really to say, no, this sucks, you know, we have to change this, or we might do this, and why we don't do that. And we also said, no man, fuck that, we're not gonna do that. You know, it's like we have that freedom, you know, because we're working towards the same objective. It's not my idea or his idea, you know. Yeah. Everyone put on the same pot, you know, and whatever works, that's the idea that we're gonna work on it, you know. So
absolutely,
it's always that, it's something that really we have to have that chemistry. Otherwise, you know, nothing really flows. You know, nothing really happens.
I think in a case like that, it's all about ego, isn't it? It's all about being able to put your ego,
yes,
your ego to one side and saying, okay, like I might have written this, but that doesn't matter. This is about serving the song. The song is more important than any one individual.
I mean, you know, the ego is always there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we all suffer. We all suffer.
Yeah.
That type of, you know, whatever wish, whatever ego is, you know. But in the end, you know, we're going to put a CD there, and we're going to have to live with that to the rest of our lives, you know. Why we're going to give up or, you know, have to accept something that you don't agree? You know, we have to really to use arguments and not really force an idea, you know, because otherwise it's going to be other projects. It's going to be a solo album, or it's going to be something else, you know. So if it's Sepultura, let's be Sepultura, you know, let's work as Sepultura, and we all have the freedom to bring that. If you follow the Sepultura career, every member that came into this band, it changed the band. It drastically, I might add, you know, because I joined in 87, and the band changed a lot, you know, the sound, the visual, the topics on the lyrics and everything, and so on. And then Max left the band, Derek came in, another huge change, you know, with the visual, with the lyrics, with the sound and everything. Same with Gianlo Dolabella on drums, and now with Eloy Casagrande, you know. Why are we going to put somebody new in the band to try to copy the other one was there? You know, it's so pathetic, you know, and a lot of bands do that, you know, because of formats and record labels and management that, you know, that try to cheat the fan, you know. Oh, this is what you're going to buy this in 2020, but thank you in 1985, all right?
But it's
ridiculous, you know. This is ridiculous. It's like, and a lot of people fall for that, you know. They fall for an idea. They don't see what's in front of them, which is fucking a horrible band playing bad, but, you know, remind your old teenage days or something, you know?
So
yes. You have to respect the present, you know? You have to respect here, now, and really work, if you have conditions or not, to do whatever, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, when you are, you know, freely collaborating in the studio and you're knocking ideas about as well, I always find it fascinating when you've got, you know, one person has an idea and another person has an idea. And what you end up doing was neither of their ideas, but an idea that came from those two ideas.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. And that's where the argument and the communication, it works. Whatever be, you can really scream or something, but you have to listen to each other. You know, you have to, a stupid crazy idea, something can inspire you to come up with something else, you know. So you really have to listen, you know, and you're exactly right, you know, certain situations that solutions came from the most bizarre, you know, conversations or places, you know. Which is, we have to be aware all the time, you know, especially when you are recording. Because when you are recording, you have so many different situations that you have to find, you know, to improvise, not only the music, but the way to record or when to record or how to record. Anyway, you know, so you have really to be aware that anything can go.
yeah. And I guess... But like you say, it was establishing that that partnership with Jens on a previous album that made you want to go back there, because you were very pleased with the previous album and it just made sense to go back. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yes, I mean, we loved the experience to go to Sweden. We did the drums in Stockholm, and then we went to Örebro, where Jens lives. He has his studio, and we stayed there, and It was great, you know. It was really very productive, you know. Jens liked to start very early, which was very difficult for me in Machine Messiah sessions. Okay, 7 in the morning, we start tomorrow. Okay, I thought it was a joke. Man.
Wow.
Man, we're a metal band, man. Come
fucking
on.
7 o'clock in the morning? Yeah, see you later.
7 o'clock in the morning, yes. Every day to record everything. Guitars, not drums and not vocals. Vocals, because, you know, it's something...
You need to be warmed up.
No, drums as well. Drums, we started early as well. But vocals was more, you know, I started earlier, and then later in the day, Derek did his parts and stuff. But yeah, Jens has this schedule because, like I said, we had to adapt ourselves for the good of the project. You know, if I want an idiot like a rock star, I don't work after, you know, before 2 p.m. Fuck you, you know. I mean, what the fuck, man? You know, why you don't do? Because you never did. Because you're an idiot, you know. Because if you do, you're gonna find a new you, you know. Because you're gonna have a different sensation. You're gonna have a different perspective, and that's learning, you know. That's how you learn. If you do everything you do the same all the time, you stop in time, you know. So you have to challenge yourself, you know, to respect to not because he's an idiot as well, because, like, you know. I want to start 7 because I want. No, he has an argument. He has like a why, you know. He has to stop at 6 because he has to do all the stuff. And so he has to arrange his day. His wife was pregnant and stuff. So, you know, he has to arrange his stuff so he couldn't really miss the recording. And he was so professional, so fantastic, you know, between doing all the stuff. He was 100% all the time on the recording process, deciding what note should be where, and this kind of stuff with his family never got him in a way, you know, which was really a master, you know. Jens was a master really to deal with such a delicate situation. He had a pregnant wife and 2 kids, young, very young kids, you know, and he was recording Machine Messiah with us at the same time, you know. And plus, he went to play some sport there with his friends, and he broke his ankle or something.
Oh,
so he
man.
Was in crutches.
Oh, well, fucking hell, that sounds horrendous.
I mean, pregnant wife, 2 young kids, clutches, and recording Sepultura. Jens Borgren.
Wow, I tell you. I'm really looking forward to speaking to him. I'm looking forward to thanking him for mastering our album as well, because he did an amazing job. Because the way he masters is just insane.
Yes, he's amazing. He's technically, and he's young, you know. I mean, his knowledge is amazing, you know. He's really loves what he does, and he really prepares himself. He study a lot, you know. He knows technological things, you know, in the studio, never a technical problem was a problem to stop the recording. You know, he always found a way to continue and stuff. And that shows that, you know, he's very knowledgeable, you know, to find possibilities and new ways to keep going, you know, which is great, you know, in the recording process, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that sounds like such a... Well, presumably you thought, well, look, if he can deliver under those circumstances, then, you know, imagine what he can do when his life is not as crazy as that.
Yeah, so and in Quadra was like that, you know. I mean, in Quadra was much more relaxed. He was, you know, of course, his kid was born. It was like 3 years later or two, 3 years later. Still young and everything, but much more relaxed in that sense, you know. He was no clutches and stuff, you know. So,
yeah.
So it was really more relaxed in that sense, for sure, you know. But and I think, you know, Quadra really reflects that as well, you know, because he was really more relaxed in that sense. Didn't use to samples or drums, you know. A lot less editing that he did on Machine Messiah, you know. So he was more Brazilian in that sense, you know, not too Swedish. More Brazilian, you know, and we were a little more Swedish and not too Brazilian. So we found that balance, that Quadra was really a perfect balance for our chemistry, you know, that worked out so great.
Yeah, that, and it's, I mean, he's done so much with so many different bands. It's incredible. But that your album, just, you know, it has that unique Sepultura sound. I mean, you've never sounded better. It's a stunning sounding record, and presumably when you're putting it together and you're creating the sounds, all of that starts early doors, doesn't it? The excitement starts building when you're actually piecing it together.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, and it was not hard at all. You know, everything was really cool, really simple. You know, everything we tried, it worked. You know, it was insane. Yeah, I mean, there was not one idea that we say, "Oh, we're not going to use that." We used everything, you know, and
that
a lot
never
of flyers
happens.
And stuff. Even the song like "Isolation" that you mentioned, you know. Yeah. I mean, the first part of the album, the first three songs, was really inspired by the old school thrash metal, you know,
yeah.
Arise, and yeah. Our old days, Beneath the Remains and stuff. And then Jens, maybe in "Isolation" we could put some strings and chorus. Oh man, I don't think so, man. You know, it's like, this is trash. But okay, let's try. And when I heard of it, fuck, man, this sounds amazing. <You know? laughs> it's fantastic. So that kind of stuff, we have to give chance to ourselves, you know, really to listen first. And then if it's really such, say, no, man, that's not going to use that, you know. But, and also that idea to be inspired of the first part to be trash and stuff was not a rule. You know, it was not like something that we have to respect as a rule, you know.
Yeah.
It was an inspiration. And we always have room to create something new, you know. So we kind of, you know, mix that kind of modern, you know, Sepultura with the old stuff on "Isolation," which worked out so great, you know. It was really cool.
But I can see why it was such a storming opening to the album. Is kind of like, I don't know, it really does feel like you're throwing the gauntlet down right at the beginning, track one. You're just going like, right.
Yeah, it was written for that. I mean, it was written to be the opener of the album with
right.
The intro, with the concept and everything. We had the concept already and stuff. And
right.
It was just specifically written to open an album like Quadra, you know, and she was made for that, you know.
So, and he's one of...
and every album and every song of the album was like that. I mean, it was really interesting because it was the first time that we had the running order, even before we had the songs. You know, because
wow.
We already knew the way we, because the first three would be more trashy and stuff. So every song or every riff that we want to work, we trashy and more stuff, we want to work on the first part. And then second part, the next three songs will be more percussive, you know, like the Capital Enslavement and Phantom Self and the Roots Days and stuff. Okay. So, you know, every song was really like that. So we didn't have like working titles as we usually do. We had like codes, you know. Oh, this is song one for side three. This is song three for side two. This is song, you know. In the middle of the process was a little confusing, but we managed to survive.
Yeah, and it's funny having all of that kind of all of that going on in the background. That's and everything coming together, and at some point you must have been thinking that this is going too well. Something's got to go wrong.
No, not at all, man. I was praising
and
really celebrating.
right. Yeah.
What went wrong is the fucking virus. That's what went wrong.
Yes.
You know, because it fucked up all the tour and everything, all the campaign and everything that we are, you know, finding new ways now to continue and stuff. But everything was really in place, you know, Nuclear Blast, all the management, Jens, the band, everyone was so focused, so professional, and we had a lot of fun, you know, we had a great time. It's not because it's a difficult album, it's a very challengeable album to record, which would be a hell, you know, was very enjoyable, you know, was very difficult. We had really to do the best that we could, you know, to write an album and to record an album like that, especially, you know, and everybody stepped up everyone's game, you know. I think Paulo especially did his best job as a bass player. He really prepared himself, I mean, like any other album before, you know, and the chemistry in him and Jens was great. Him and Derek and myself and Jens, you know, it was really too perfect, you know. Not too perfect, was perfect. Not two or less, was at the right place there.
Yeah, no, I had a brilliant experience in the studio the last album that we did, and I know that it's there's something just I can't explain it. There's something uniquely satisfying about walking out of a studio when you've had an experience like that. It's a feeling you can't describe, isn't it? Which is possibly the worst question ever.
The mastering of the album, I cried. I never really cried.
Wow.
You know, listening to a Sepultura album like that, I really was really emotional, man, because dude, it's not easy, you know, to do an album like Quadra, to do everything. I have a family. I stay away, you know, a long time away from home. I miss so many family important things and everything. And, you know, and when you listen to something like that, and you really feel that, wow, man, you know, everything's really worth it, you know, to all these difficult times and all the crazy, you know, rhythm of our lives and everything, you know. It was very pleasant, you know, like a feeling that I never felt before, you know. It was really intense. And then I started really to receiving the messages from people listening to the album and stuff, and themselves were always very emotional as well, you know, like which is really cool, because that's what an artist really wishes for, you know, that your art, that your music touches people, you know, whatever the touch is, you know. But the people were responding and listening to the whole album, you know. I read some statements from people that, this is the first album I listened entirely in Spotify, you know, because everybody was listening only to tracks and stuff. But it's great, you know, it's a great feeling, and it's something that is really, that motivates us so much, you know, to do what we do.
Yeah, and there was a buzz before the album came out. Without a doubt, there was a buzz going around. I got an advanced copy to because of podcast, but having said that, this is the CD. Okay, that is the CD box you can hear. Okay, that is your album. I did buy it. Okay, but
awesome.
I had the
thank you.
hey, look, if bands can't support bands, who the fuck can? When I first got the digital copy, I put it on my phone and I was like, I had it in the car, and yeah, when I was allowed back when we were allowed to drive, I was driving along. I was like, I pulled over because I was like, hang on, I've missed a load of stuff. I had to completely just put it to one side and say, right, I'm not going to listen to this while I'm driving. I'm going to wait until I get home.
That's amazing, man. Fantastic.
It was just like, no, I can't do this. I either listen to the album or crash the car. Yeah, that's the options at the moment. And straight away, obviously got the CD because I'm an old school CD fan, uncompressed, make it as big as possible. And it just fucking sounds amazing. It really does. And I mean, all of the work, all of the effort that you guys have put in has been incredible. But it's funny, you mentioned something there that I think, you know, you talked about your sacrifice, about being away from the family and everything else. And I think sometimes what gets forgotten in all of this is the families, because they are making a sacrifice so you can listen to the best Sepultura album ever.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it, man. I mean, my wife especially, you know, she had to go through many situations. You know, I was in Japan, she was in the hospital with my son, and many others, you know, missing Father's Day in school, and, you know, very important stuff. And but in the other hand, you know, it's what we do, you know. It's like there's no perfect life, let's say, you know, perfect in the sense that everything's going to go right and everything's going to go as you wish. You know, that doesn't exist. You know, you really have to work with the situation you have, you know. There's so many other professions, you know, not only musicians like myself, that suffers the same, you know, like a doctor or a politician or an airplane pilot or whatever, you know. This is not a privilege of a musician, you know. So, and I seen and I met and, you know, I know so many families that live under the same roof and see each other every day. They don't know each other. You know, it's not the physical contact that make a family, you know.
True.
It's like I have friends that I don't talk to them for 10 years. And soon I talk to them, it's like I was with him yesterday, you know.
Yeah.
It's something else. It's respect. It's respect your choices. You know, if you go away, don't be an idiot. Don't be a fool. Don't go drunk on stage. You know, don't be a clown of yourself. You know, I'm far away from home already to be a clown here. You know, why I'm doing this, you know. So be professional. Prepare yourself. Enjoy the stage, you know. Be an inspiration to your family. Do what you do. Do what you love, but professionally. Prepare yourself, you know. And don't try to create fantasy. Just be straight. You know, this is what it is. I am what I am. I have to do what I do. And the family, it is the way it is. And let's, you know, be this family. We don't have to be like any other family. You know, we are what we are. You know, in regardless to Sepultura and to my own family, you know, which are my main two families, you know, because I spend a lot of time on the road with the road, with the band and the roadies and stuff, you know, so they are my second family for sure. So, and really face the situation, you know, don't think that you're going to start in a career or something and everything's going to be roses and you know, and Grammys and stuff. And to win a Grammy, you have to really work a lot and suffer and really sacrifice and really prepare yourself. You know, it's no easy. So that's what it is. I mean, you really have to be authentic and really have to be honest with yourself for start, you know. And then people around you is going to build some. We're going to build something together, which we are. I'm married for 26 years now, three kids, you know, with the same wife and stuff. Patricia, my wife, has been through my whole career, basically, with Sepultura, you know, since 1990. You know, we married in 94, but we are together since 1990, you know. So, and she and my family, she's the balance, you know. How many times I came back home thinking I was fucking Eddie Van Halen, you know. hey, where's my red carpet? You know, go get my beer and stuff. Hey, come down. Go get your kids in school and go buy fucking bread in the...
Here's a rake. Go and get the leaves out the garden.
And that was very helpful, of course, and very healthy, you know. You need that kind of stuff, especially when you're young. You start making money, traveling the world, everything's so... You know, everybody wants to give you stuff and, you know, everything and... If you don't have that, it's pretty easy to lose yourself, you know, and start believing the myth, you know, and then you're gone.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? That's a lovely point to leave. I've got some listeners' questions. If you can hang around for a few more minutes for me,
sure.
But for now, I want to finish on my best friend who I've known for over 30 years. He discovered thrash metal through meeting me. We've been friends for life. And I said to him that I was interviewing you and was, did you have a question or anything like that? And he said, no, I haven't got a question, but more just a statement. He and I saw you on the club tour of Roots, where you played the smaller venues.
Yeah.
So you did the UK tour.
Terrorist Stage.
Yeah, that's the one. And you played the LA2 downstairs. So sure. It was just along from the Astoria, but underground. It was a
great
1996. You were wearing an England shirt because it was just after Euro 96, or Euro 96 was still on, and the show was phenomenal. And given all of the sort of various different instruments that we used as well, I said to my friend, "Did he have a question?" He said, "No, just tell him that after I came out of that gig, music was changed forever for me."
Wow, that's a fucking amazing statement.
and it's
so great to hear that type of stories, man, because, you know, kids that to me did that to me here in Brazil when I came to see them in Creatures of the Night tour in a big stadium here, you know, in 1983 and stuff. It changed my life, you know, that's why I'm here. And to hear that we kind of did the same, you know, for some people, it's amazing. And I know Roots was really, it still is a very special album, you know. There's nothing like before or after, you know. It's really a unique work that we did, and it's so special. And if you put Roots today, also it seems like we did yesterday, you know. So it's so alive, you know, so natural. It's really a great album, and it's so great that people still talk about, and this album still motivates people, you know. It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
And especially that show, of course, because that show... I mean, that tour, you know, was insane. You know, it was a few dates in a very small places, preparing for the whole tour and for the Roots tour and stuff. And I remember it was really exciting, you know, because we knew Roots will be something really big and something really special, you know. So at the same time, we had all the problems with the management and stuff, and that's another story. But on stage and everything, you know, we really enjoy ourselves. You know, it was amazing.
Oh, well, that's awesome, man. So, look, let's leave it there. I have some listener questions for you, but for now, thank you very much.
Good. It was awesome. It was an amazing chat. And anytime, you know, it was great.
Thanks, man. So if you can hang on there.
Well, I seem to be saying this a lot recently, but I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Really, really got along well with Andreas. And when doing an interview, you really do get a feel sometimes that somebody is really engaged and into it. And sometimes sometimes I do get the opposite as well. But it was really cool. I hope you agree. Well, you just listened to it. Andreas and I really seemed to get a really good back and forth going, and there was a really good vibe. And what you are now going to hear are the reader questions, which are great. I mean, there's, you know, another half hour. So generous with their time. Everybody involved with this has been brilliant. And you're now going to get the fan questions. Now, normally, they would be behind a paywall for Patreon subscribers. Now, if you're wondering what that is, if you are listening to this podcast on a device of any kind where you can see the description of the podcast, in the description of the podcast, you will see support this podcast. That's a live link. If you click on that, that will take you straight to Patreon. You can sign up there. It's only $5 a month and you get this podcast early, but you also get to find out who I'm interviewing and you get to submit questions before the interview takes place. And that's why all of these guys got their questions asked and answered. So if that's something that you think, that sounds cool, well, A, you're right, it is, and B, it's only $5 a month, and C, click on the link and come and join the fun. It's patreon.com/HowardHSmith. There's loads of behind-the-scenes stuff for the podcast, from Acid Rain as well. So if you'd like to do that, please do join me. Sign up, subscribe wherever you can to the podcast, and join me at Patreon as well. So, without further ado, the lucky people at Patreon get to do things like this. Here are the fan questions.
I've got some really cool questions here. I will try and get through them as quick as possible. I am aware that, you know, you have a life. So, here we go. First up, And there's some great questions in here, or at least I think so anyway. Right, first up is Carl. Carl says, how did the four playing styles concept for the new album come about?
I started a research a year, a little more than a year before we went to the studio in August last year to start recording Quadra. I started a research because the concept is really important, you know, when we start writing and, you know, to give us the direction and all the elements we're going to use and everything. So I start with numbers, numerology, especially because algorithms, you know, is a term that we hear so much in the latest years and stuff, you know. So I started there. And I found this book called Quadrivium. Quadrivium is a book that talks about the four liberal arts, which is music, cosmology, geometry, and mathematics. You know, it's a fantastic book with lots of definitions and history and stuff. And the number four came from there. You know, we are four members in the band, and the number four is you know, the way we divided the year, four horsemen, or whatever. You know, the number four is all around our culture. You know, the way we see the world and four seasons and stuff. You know. So Quadra came from that, you know, from numerology and numbers. And Quadra, because Quadra, it's a Portuguese name for sports court, you know, where you know, like a basketball court or a tennis court, you know. And that's where you have a set of rules where the game plays, you know, a delimited space where you set the rules where your game play, where you play the game, you know. So, which is life itself. I mean, Brazil is a Quadra with the set of rules where we play our game according to the concepts that our culture and religion and education gave to us, you know. And in England, you have a different set. In Saudi Arabia, you have a different set. In Indonesia. And usually these differences create stereotypes and creates my nation is better than yours. Or my God is more powerful than yours. All these stupid ideas and concepts, you know. And we should respect the differences and not attack them. Because no one is wrong. We're just a consequence of our education. That's all. You know, we just see things in a different way, in a different perspective. And we should learn from each other and not indoctrinate each other, you know. Anyway, Quadra talks about that. And it came from this research, you know, that I did.
Awesome. Thank you. Next question. What songs are you most looking forward to playing live from the new album?
Oh, at this point, all of them.
Yeah.
All the old stuff and all the Sepultura catalog.
Yeah.
I play them all. Just put me on the stage.
Someone said to me the other day, what are your plans for the band? I said, do a gig.
One fucking gig. I think the song Guardians of Earth, I think it's most exciting to put on stage. I know we were ready to go on tour, you know, in March. 2 days before we're supposed to fly, we canceled.
Oh, no. No, guys.
So we were ready to go, you know. I mean, we practiced all the songs. We have seven songs from Quadra on the set list, you know, and Guardians of Earth is one of them. So really looking forward to perform that on stage.
Well, first time I heard Guardians of Earth, do you know what I did? I flicked it back to the beginning to listen to it again. And that was the first time I'd ever listened to the album. I'm like, I got through that song and I was like, I'm listening to that fucker again. awesome tune. So next question. The marquee shows in London supporting Sodom are the equivalent of seeing the Beatles at the Cavern Club in Liverpool. They've just become myth over here. What are your recollections from those shows?
Oh my God, it's a myth for us too, man. I mean, who could imagine what Sepultura could play at the Marquee Club? And wow,
yeah,
it's the most impact that we never expect. That the most of the people there were there for us and not for Sodom, because we are open for Sodom. You know, the first time we played at the Marquee,
yeah,
and then we headlined Marquee on the Arise tour when we came back to England, and was a huge line, just Sepultura shirts and stuff was beautiful. But that first show was something, a surprise for us, you know, because outside Germany or Austria, you know, Sodom was not that big or not that interesting for, you know, for the Because on the Agent Orange tour in 1989, when we first played Marquee, is the biggest Sodom album, I think, to date, you know, and they were on the charts in Germany and stuff and Austria, but Outside was not really that strong, you know, and people were very curious about Sepultura, you know, and was very surprising to see people there with Sepultura shirts and singing Inner Self and Beneath the Remains, already knowing our songs, you know. Was so incredible to be in that historical place. We just could imagine everybody that played there and stuff. And I went walking in the streets, going to the pubs, you know. It was just more than a dream. It was such real, you know, it was reality.
Yeah.
Much better than dreaming, you know. We were there living the dream, you know, literally, you know. It was amazing. It was fantastic and unforgettable, you know.
Well, definitely. For a bunch of kids from Brazil, yeah, it's at that point it's unheard of, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, man. Wow, it's like what the you know, of course, our dream was to play at Hammersmith Odeon, which we did on the Arise tour, headlined, you know, Hammersmith Odeon, because of Motorhead and you know, no Sleep to Hammersmith and all that.
Yeah,
but. To be at the Marquee there with Sodom was you know, I still have, you know, like the ads on the magazines and stuff, you know, to see the logo of the Marquee and Sepultura written and stuff, you know.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's still very emotional, you know. It's still very emotional today, you know, to see, wow, man, what an achievement, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you were saying earlier as well, it makes you appreciate those times that you spent with Lemmy even more.
No doubt about it, man. I mean, we headlined the Hammersmith Odeon, and then in 2004 on Sepultura Motorhead tour, we played with Motorhead at the Hammersmith Odeon. I mean, what? It's like, okay, man. You know, it's something that you know, I will only dream to go to the Hammersmith to watch a concert. You know, to see whatever Slayer or whatever Black Sabbath. You know, every band that played there. Let alone to be there and to headline and then share the stage with Lemmy and Motorhead, you know, it was insane. It was beautiful.
Awesome. Well, he adds that the rumors over here were that Sodom were a bit upset with you for being so good and going down so well. Was there any truth in that? You know, have you seen him since and talked about it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I cannot blame that. Because imagine, Sodom, first time in the charts. Yeah. First time they have a tour bus. And then they have to share with four Brazilians. I would be pissed off too, man. Fuck, man. What the fuck? I mean, you know, of course we have to pay the bus and stuff with, you know, budget situation and everything. But I can imagine their kind of frustration. You know, the first time they have a tour bus, first time they're doing the charts in Germany. And then there comes these four Brazilians that no crew, no speaking English or German, you know, and going on stage and killing, you know. We had a few problems with them, but nothing really serious, you know. We're just like, whatever, they only speak German to say the directions of the day. The tour manager's there like, oh, today we're going to stop here. We're going to have lunch there and stuff, be back at four and stuff, all in German. They didn't care about us.
Right.
But usually, but slowly, you know, we found our way. We found our way of working, and we're still really great friends with Tom today. You know, every time we see each other, we have great memories of the tour and stuff. You know, and we respect each other so much till today. We never had like a fight or a beef or nothing. Everything was really funny. You know, we took in a funny way. You know. We didn't shower for the last 10 days of the tour. That was our protest.
Good for you.
I remember in Switzerland, in Zurich or something, the tour manager trying to oblige us to leave the bus. Go shower now, please. Now we speak English.
Brilliant. Carl also says, you were the band of the day at Donington in 1994. What do you remember of the day?
I remember that we outsold merchandising, outsold Aerosmith on the day.
Wow.
I mean, it was unheard. I mean, we sold more than Aerosmith. We were practically the headliner or the day, on that day. I mean, and we played with Pantera and Aerosmith, if I'm not... No, Pantera was with Ozzy, I think, later. Or with... No, I think it was 94, yeah. And so it was crazy, you know. Chaos AD was really hitting hard, you know, with the summer festivals. We were touring with Pantera as well and stuff. So it was really a moment that I felt Sepultura was really something different from other bands. Like we found our place. Up to Arise and stuff, you know, Sepultura was a lot compared to Slayer and Possessed and all that thrash scene, which we were really flattered because Slayer, you know, one of our big main influences, one of my favorite bands and all. But, I mean, we wanted to be respected as Sepultura, you know, and Chaos AD really brought this element of the groovier side of Sepultura, the percussive, you know, Refuse, Resist, Territory, all that stuff. Especially Kaiowas, which we brought the percussive instruments on stage, where we invited whatever musicians or friends to go together on stage, yeah, and play together with us and stuff, which was known as the Kaiowas Jam, you know, that Pantera and many other bands, you know, were apart many times and stuff. So, and Castle Donington was really the peak, you know, of that momentum that we were living there, you know, playing Castle Donington. Yeah. I remember Bruce Dickinson interviewed me and Max.
Oh,
can
wow.
Can you fucking believe that, man? Bruce Dickinson was like the host of BBC there for the day for the Castle Donington. And we went to the studio there, and he was there, like, making questions to me. Like, dude, I don't know how to answer that. I'm not... It's like, sit!
Sure, you must have been...
I want to the number of the beast with you, man.
Yeah, you must have been like, look, don't ask me any questions. Can we ask you some questions?
Oh, my God. He was so nice. I mean, Bruce Dickinson is probably the... I don't know, man, the master of metal, you know, it's... Still today, this last Iron Maiden tour, it's unbelievable, you know, what he does on stage and the way he sings and the way he presents and represents metal, you know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Well, I believe it or not, this is a slightly different experience. I up until last year, I used to run the pub quiz in Bruce's local pub. So I've ended up getting pissed with him a few times. But I never mentioned I was in a band. He knows I do stand up, but I never mentioned I was in a band because I just thought I just don't want it out there. You know what I mean? Right. Next question. Here we go. This is from Scott Bamford. As a long-term fan of the band and your signature guitar sound, do you have any plans to do any more solo releases to follow up on Hubris 1 and 2?
Oh, thank you for the question. It's a project and a solo album that I enjoyed a lot. You know, it took a long time for me because, you know, it was between changing drummers, Igor was leaving the band, and two albums and stuff, but I managed to put it out. I do a lot of acoustic. I sing Portuguese and English and many guests and stuff. I don't have plans, but I have a demo with around 12 to 15 songs for a next solo album, you know. The only thing I really need to have time really to go and really work on it, you know, and choose the songs and work on the stuff, you know. But so far, no plans. For sure... sooner than later, you know, I want to start working on it to put out something new, you know. It'll be cool.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Well, this is still Scott. I have seen you play, I've seen you guys play many times in Scotland. As the sole guitarist of the band, what challenges does that present in playing your material live?
Sorry, could you repeat?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Cut here.
Yeah, I've seen you guys play many times in Scotland. As the sole guitarist of the band, what challenges does that present in playing your material live?
Well, just new challenges. You know, as I said, you know, Sepultura never really tried to reproduce what is not there anymore. You know, I think
yes.
We always use the elements that we have. You know, and I feel that Sepultura. It's a little unfair with us because it feels that we are the only band that people talks about that subject, you know. Oh, but why do you don't have a second? Just because Max had a second guitar before. I mean, you see Motorhead with two guitars, one guitar.
Yeah.
You see Thin Lizzy, let's say, I mean, whatever. You see Iron Maiden with two guitars and three guitars. And stuff. Nobody says anything, you know. But only Sepultura has to have. I mean, why? I mean, it's Van Halen, Pantera, Black Sabbath. How many bands that have only one guitar? Imagine Jimmy Page trying to reproduce everything he did on the studio live. I mean,
yeah.
it's no sense. The live situations, it's a different world. You know, the studio situations is a fake world. The studio is a trick world. You know, people cannot sing. People that cannot play in the studio, you know. Live on the stage is a whole different world. There is the real music. That's where music really is, you know. All the rest is just like a hologram of what music's supposed to be, which is on stage, live. Why Led Zeppelin have so many bootleg albums during the 70s? Because every show was a different story. You know, was a different jam, was a different situation, you know. And Jimmy Page wasn't concerned if I did 12 guitars on some, you know, song remains the same. This is what we here have now. Let's have a good time. Let's enjoy. If you want to hear the 12 guitars, go listen to the album.
Or, I totally agree, or go and listen to bands who have got a shitload of Pro Tools coming through the PA.
Pro Tools, yeah, and extra musicians and stuff. I mean, what's the point, you know? It's like, I really like to respect the stage situation, you know, to improvise and to take, I mean, the song Kiowas, for instance, that I just mentioned, you know, we presented the song Kiowas in, I don't know, 15, 18, 20 different performances and versions, acoustically, with guitars, with electric guitars, with orchestra, with instruments from, you know, Turkey, whatever, you know, but still the same song. Oh, I want to hear Kiowas the same way you guys recorded. No, the song is not on the album. The song is here now.
Yes.
You know? Let's enjoy.
That's that. Do you know what? That is a great way of putting it. So yeah, that song's on the album. This song is here now. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you, Ritchie Blackmore, for instance, Deep Purple. You know, you never knew what would happen. And that's the exciting thing. Could be shitty, could be genius as well, you know. And in between, you had an amazing show.
But this is what this. Funnily enough, this comes back to something you were saying earlier as well about management and bands giving way to pressure. It's about a kind of dumbing down. It's basically whether it's TV companies, record labels, whoever. There's this assumption that people are really stupid and that if they go to a live show and if it's not exactly like the album, then they'll walk out and never come back. Just insulting to the it's insulting to music fans.
And it's very sad and boring, you know. It's like a sad and boring life because you're going to be listening the version of Black Dog from Led Zeppelin for how many times? You know,
yeah.
It's always there. Of course, I listen to that and stuff. But when you go to a show, man, you know, it's something else. I mean, it is something else. You know, Black Sabbath, you hear the bootleg tapes and stuff. It's so alive, so beautiful, you know, and it's so unique. You're never going to forget a unique experience like that. No other Black Sabbath fan, you know, that wasn't on that show, we will have that experience, you know. And it's very personal, I guess, you know. So,
yeah,
there are bands that go there and do the same and stuff. I'm not saying that's wrong, you know, and I'm not judging anyone. In my point of view, that's the way I express and I see music, you know. It's live. It's there.
Well,
that's the real music.
Well, I was at a thrash show about 18 months ago and I saw one of the bands play. They weren't a thrash band, but they played. And their guitarist was playing a solo and managing to jump up and down at the same time, and the whole thing was note perfect. There was just like you know, Pro Tool drums. The whole thing was just it was Andreas. It was a fucking insult, is what it was. You know.
Yes. No doubt.
You know. But anyway, look. Next, we get carried away here. Next question. This is. This is also from Scott. He says, you've picked up one of the best drummers in the world. What does Eloy bring to the songwriting process in driving the Sepultura sound?
Well, he brings everything, you know.
Yeah.
Brings everything he got. I mean, like I said, every Sepultura new member that came in brought everything, you know, that what makes Sepultura what we are today, you know. So, in Brazil, it's full of great drummers, man. I mean, we're very lucky, you know. I mean, of course, Igor Cavaleira is the one who created that style, that Brazilian groovier trash, that yes. style, you know, that inspired Gianni Labella and Eloy, for sure, you know. But Gian and Eloy is taking Sepultura's music to Gian took, man. Now we're taking to new levels, you know. And Eloy, basically, I think is the best drummer I ever seen in my life, you know. Especially for thrash metal, and I play with so many drummers. You know, I play with great my idols. I play with so many different drummers. You know, and work with the best. I mean, this is a Sepultura characteristic. We have to have a great drummer, otherwise we wouldn't be able, you know, really to express the Sepultura way. You know, and Igor started that. It's like Ozzy having a bad guitar player on his side, you know. Randy Rhoads gave a new way for him. You know, Randy Rhoads saw Ozzy. This is the way. You need an amazing guitar player like myself on your side. Go have fun. You know, after Tony Iommi, you know, he has to have somebody really, really special. It's like David E. Roth starting a new band with a normal guitar player.
With Steve, instead, you know, he starts it with Steve Vai, Billy Sheehan, and Greg Bissonette.
Of course, he has to. Van Halen.
They make the best album Van Halen never made.
Yeah, and it took to different levels, you know. It took to different situations and stuff, and that's exciting. You know, it's great.
Well, again, his performance is just phenomenal on the new album. So we now move to Nick Russell's questions. And this is an interesting one. Whilst Chewy has done an amazing job on guitar with Voivod, your style of playing would have fitted perfectly. I always felt you were the only known guitarist who could have taken Piggy's place, no problem. Would you have been interested, and were you ever considered?
Dude, funny enough, I was invited to be a part of Voivod after Piggy died and stuff.
Wow.
It was starting some. It was a possibility, you know. They were like looking around and stuff, and my name was there, you know. And I was so honored, you know, because Voivod really, especially on Dissonant Sounds and stuff, especially on my early lead guitar, you know, playing and stuff, and on Schizophrenia especially, there's a lot of Voivod influence and stuff, especially the album Nothing Face, you know, is one of my favorites, and I love that album. And I won't say what almost happened, because I couldn't do it. Anything else, I really couldn't really you know, move to Canada and all that stuff, you know. I really couldn't do it. And the replacement they have, it's fantastic, you know. He it's Piggy. He plays so great, and he looks even like a little bit, you know. And a great guy, you know. We jammed together at the 70,000 Tons of Metal like 2 years ago. So I watched the whole concert. Voivod was great, you know. And you know, it's a band I respect so much, you know, always. And I was, like I said, I was really honored, you know, but I really couldn't do it, you know. But it was really cool that I was considered, you know, for sure.
Cool, yeah, definitely. That was Nick Russell's.
I have to finish in 5 minutes.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, look, Andreas, you've been absolutely wonderful. I will smash through these questions. Let's go for these really quickly, okay?
All right.
So, here we go. I enjoyed the quadra tracking videos. It looked like you all dug deep to get the performances, judging by the puta count. How much rehearsal did it take to get the songs ready for the studio?
I mean, we spent a lot of time really working on the studio, doing the pre-production and demos and stuff. And we always like to go to the studio with the 90% of the material done, let's say, you know. Decide, oh, this is going to be this, and we're going to go there. Of course, when you go to the studio, the producer comes, and we discuss every little detail or every song, and we cut and add and duplicate and stuff. And But you know, for Quadra, we took, I don't know, about like 6-7 months, you know, working, because I really want to have more time to develop the songs, because Machine Messiah was really quickly, you know, like 3 or 4 months we did everything. But for Quadra, it took a little while.
Okay, cool. Mark's got another question, but it's very, very long, loads of answers. And so I'm sorry, Mark, we're going to have to skip that question. We've got Ian Treblico, who's got two questions, and then we're done. What or who has been the biggest influence on your guitar playing style?
Well, Black Sabbath, for sure, Randy Rhoads, Metallica, Exodus, all the Bay Area, you know, and Slayer and Anthrax and stuff. I think that guitar style really, it's really strong on the way I play, especially right hand and the heavy chops and stuff. But I have to say that Yes is also a big influence, not, of course, at first hearing, but it's there, you know, especially Stevie Howe with the acoustic stuff and the progressive structures and everything, you know. So I have to say those.
Yeah,
those
our bass player is a massive Yes fan.
Yes.
And Ian's final question, what has been your favorite tour or festival?
Wow. Fortunately, we have so many to choose from, you know. We had great, I have to say Pantera, you know, in 94.
Wow.
Motorhead in 2004. And, of course, Ozzy, Alice in Chains, and Sepultura in 92. You know, United States was unbelievable.
And I would imagine that possibly the tour that you're going to enjoy the most is going to be the next one. Because it will mean that we've actually out the house.
I hope so, and it will be, man. Let's keep the positive...
Yes.
Vibrations go.
Okay, mate. Well, look, I'm putting this together. I haven't done Jens yet, but I've got Derek, I've got you. I'll have Jens next week. The podcast normally comes out on a Friday. What I wanted to do was I can hand this over to you guys if you want, and with a link, and you can roll it out on one of your Wednesdays if you want as part of whatever. It's entirely up to you guys.
Oh, that's a good idea, actually. That'll be cool, man.
All right, cool.
Talk about to the guys there. That'll be cool.
All right, well, look, once I've got it together, I will, you know, I'll edit it. I can send a file over to you if you want to have a listen to it all the way through, and, you know, and all the rest of it. And then we can work out how to get it to you and how to launch it. But yeah, it'd be really cool, man, because it's going to be really in depth, and it's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you, man. It was really fun. It was
cool.
Chat and stuff. And we're here anytime, man.
Cool. I'm gonna send you that link to the punky tune that is inspired. I'm doing that now. Okay.
Thank you.
Cheers, man. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Just listening to that again, it's just so much fun. Brings back really, really, really cool memories in the middle of lockdown. Having a chance to catch up with Andreas, who's so generous with his time, and just really great. And the whole band, everybody has just been so good to deal with. It's been brilliant. Really enjoyed that. Now, I am going to put a link. There is going to be another link in the description of the podcast. So you have to, you know, find the description somewhere, but if you in the description of the podcast, I'll put a live link to the video for that song I was just talking about at the end there, that was inspired by the track from Nation on the Nation album. So anyway, thank you so much for listening. Really hope you enjoyed that. Again, as I said at the beginning, 2 weeks ago we had Derek Green, so have a listen to that one as well. And coming up in a couple of weeks' time is Jens Bogren, which was again really great fun to do, and fascinating stuff. Really delves into production, so all of those of you who are really into production and picking through the bones of stuff like that are going to really enjoy that episode as well. That's coming up in 2 weeks, but there'll be a podcast in between then. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, please do. You'd be more than welcome. You can find links anywhere Talking Bollocks podcast, and that will take you to wherever you need to, well, wherever you're going to listen to it, that will take you to it. There's a way of finding it. Or you can go to talkingbollock.podbean.com, and that will give you all of that. Basically, that's a website where all the podcasts are live. You can listen to them as and when you want. So thank you very much for tuning in, for coming back. Hope to see you again in a week after that for part three. And yeah, just thank you so much for supporting the podcast. Thank you to everybody who subscribes, all of the bollockers out there. Thank you for continually supporting the podcast. All of you new listeners and the Sepultura community coming to the party as well. It's great that you're all involved. Please do get involved. There's so much stuff to get into. Click the live links in the podcast descriptions, all the rest of it. Be good to each other. Stay safe wherever you are. And hey, let's hopefully see you down the front at some venue at some point next year when Quadra finally gets toured. Take care, guys. I'll speak to you again soon. Cheers.